glow an LED bulb with chickpeas and kidney beans, as commonly known in a Punjabi household as rajma and chole. Because of that property that the proteins have, these batteries actually charge 8 to 10 times faster than their lithium-ion counterparts. So we began with the Forbes Under 30 thing. I would like to see Nexus in the Fortune 500 in some time.
Welcome to the Energizing India podcast, a program that focuses on electric mobility, giving a voice to this industry sector. My name is Ravin Mirchandani, and on this program, we speak with key industry leaders and protagonists to create a narrative on how to bring about rapid adoption of electric vehicles in India. Electric mobility is fueled by one element, lithium. Lithium-ion batteries are far more efficient than any other energy storage chemistries, as they have a higher energy density, voltage capacity, and a lower self-discharge rate when compared to other rechargeable battery chemistries. In simpler terms, lithium is to the EV industry what the sun was to Superman, giving Superman powers to save the Earth all the time. But the kryptonite of our own Superman story comes from the lack of lithium reserves in India. Presently, India has to import most of its lithium batteries from, of all places, the one region we want to be most Atmanirbhar from, China. In order to make batteries in India, we will need to import raw lithium for refining either from Bolivia or Australia. We will also need to import cobalt and other materials for electric vehicle batteries. These imports result in increased dependency on other nations and, as a result, a higher cost of electric vehicles in India. But, as with every superhero story, there is always hope over the horizon, flying solo or in pairs to save us. Solving this tyrannical issue of dependence is the crux of today's episode. We speak to two amazing individuals who run a startup that is pioneering a technology which has the potential to disrupt the entire electric mobility industry globally. Building a future beyond lithium-ion batteries, twin sisters Nishita and Nikita from Orissa founded Nexus Power to design and manufacture rechargeable, bio-organic and biodegradable batteries for electric vehicles. These batteries are eco-friendly, lithium-ion free, and use crop residue as the raw material. Efficiently managing the massive farmland waste generated in India, which annually makes it to the headlines during the winter months in the north. How exciting to have two young entrepreneurs, our second Forbes 30 Under 30, featured on Energizing India. Nishita and Nikita, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.
I'm interested. There's not many people in the world that can claim to be on the Forbes 30 Under 30 to watch. The two of you are, and you're not from Delhi or Bombay. You're from a place not many people travel to, in Bhubaneswar. How does it feel to be on the Forbes 30 Under 30?
You know, it feels like, I don't know, it's one of those aims that any entrepreneur, you know, it's a milestone that anybody sets for themselves when they start off, and that's Forbes 30 Under 30. And I could proudly say today that not only are we featuring on that list, we are the only ones from Odisha so far. That makes us the first from Odisha to feature on the Forbes 30 Under 30 list. And that's equally what makes me more proud of myself and my state. You know, it's a dream come true, honestly. It's really a dream come true. It's a dream that every entrepreneur sees. It's a dream that every individual wants to achieve. And you get up one fine day to see that link online and you see your name on the list. It's actually a dream come true.
So I want to talk about that dream for a bit, and we'll start at where the dream originated and then go to where you hope to take it. But I think the origins can well be described by one statement, and that's peptides have the potential benefits in electrolytes, where it all started for you. So tell us this, the origins of this dream. Where did it come from?
You know, we were like from childhood, me and Nikita have been very passionate about electric vehicles and automotives, in fact. And our aim was always into that industry to build something with machines and aircraft, something over there. And eventually, as we grew up, we were like, you know, let's design electric vehicles, because electric vehicles back in 2014, 2015 was the in thing. Everybody was talking about it. And everybody was like, by 2018, by 2020, you'll have all electric vehicles. And then 2016, 2017, and we are like, you know, let's think about it, talk about it and get started. And eventually, you know, we started just sketching random designs, and we said, you know, we can have a car like this and try to understand the machine and the mechanism and everything for electric vehicles. But eventually, when time progressed, and 2019, when actually Nexus was born, we were discussing about electric vehicles, and we were like, you know, 2014, 2015, the talks were that 2020, we'd be all electric. But today, if you come down to seeing the situation, the government has further moved their target to 2035 to go all electric. And does that mean that there is a significant problem that lies somewhere in the industry which is not being answered to? And then we were you know, banged with questions all around us, and we had to brainstorm as to where exactly the problem is. Why can't we have electric vehicles on road? I mean, there has to be something that is stopping people. So that's where we realized that it's not the vehicle itself, but if you compare the heart, the battery and the charging infrastructure with the petrol and diesel vehicle infrastructure and their mechanism. So there's a significant difference and a gap there which needs to be answered to. And that's where we realize that, you know, maybe the battery and the charging infrastructure is what is supposed to be actually looked upon first before having the vehicles on road. And then we realize that the battery, the charging infrastructure is a very capital intensive space, and the charging infrastructure needs a lot of other permissions. And, you know, even the charging infrastructure holds good only when the battery is perfected. So then we came back to answering problems for the battery. And that's why we realized that the battery has certain concerns which need to be answered first. So that's level one. The level two is the charging infrastructure. And then finally the level three, which is the vehicles come on road. And then the entire cycle makes sense. Otherwise it does not. So switching back to level one, that's where we wanted to work on the batteries. And that's how we just started thinking, you know, you need to enhance the performance of the batteries. So they need to charge faster, they need to give a better range, and they at the same time have to be completely sustainable. So that was the key to our product development and research. We said, whatever we do, it has to be sustainable. We don't want to be in a situation where 10 years later your product is a waste for the industry and they don't know what to do with it. So with those highlights, and we kept brainstorming and, you know, understanding or thinking where to go, and that's how this book landed up in our hands. And then we know the story, and Nexus was born.
So the laws of attraction, almost, it's magical. So talk us through that night when the book landed up in your hands. You were having a conversation with your grandpa, and the idea of Nexus and rechargeable batteries came about.
You know, we were just randomly after dinner, we have a practice of the family members sitting down together in the hall and discussing and just talking, so that you get to spend time with each other. And that was when we were discussing and we were talking about entrepreneurship, and our parents and our grandparents have been very supportive, because my parents have their own businesses and they understand what it takes to build an empire. So they've been very supportive, and we were discussing, and I told them that we are very passionate about EVs and we want to do something there. And my parents and my grandparents are like, hey, what do you want to do, basically? I mean, it's a huge industry. Lot of competition, lot of big players. I mean, if you want to build a vehicle, so you got to face competition from Tata, from Hyundai, from MG. So they are bigger players, and they obviously have an upper hand. And you're just starting off, so you even got to understand all the policies and certifications, and that's a huge game altogether. So we told them that, you know, the batteries, the lithium-ion batteries in the market today have these following problems: that they take 7 hours to charge, they have a limited range in a country like India, where an average traveler travels about 100 kilometers a day. Electric vehicles give hardly 60-65 watt kilometers. So you're losing on to almost 40 kilometers per day, and that's really a concern for the Indian consumer, because they really depend on the mileage. And besides that, these batteries are a waste for the entire ecosystem once its life cycle is over. So we told that to him, and then my grandfather, being a biochemist, he said that, I mean, during his time, he had come across a lot of concepts like these, but they are still concepts. And we asked him what. So he just walked out from the entire discussion, walked into his library, and he picked out that book and he gave it to us. He said, see, read this. And he just gave me the contents page, and that had information about proteins, about peptides, about other nanoforms. It had information about a lot of other things, and he just highlighted the page number that talked about proteins, and he said, you should go there. And we turned the page. It was, I remember faintly, page number 84, 85, something like that. And we turned to that page, and that only had that one statement. So in that entire book, and it specifies on the content that it's talking about proteins, but when you open that page, it only has one line. So it's a, there's a big heading which says proteins, and there's a small line after that which says that nanoform proteins in colons, specifying peptides, could be potentially beneficial in electrolytes. And that's the only line that is there in the book, and nothing else about proteins and peptides. So I said, you know, it's there in the book, so there has to be some theory to it, and let's just get started with that. And that's where we are like, you know, next morning me and Nikita, we are like, chalo bhai, let's start, dekhte hain kya hoga, but shuru karte hain pehle.
Excellent. Pata nahi kaise lekin ho jayega. So what happened from there? By the way, which of the two of you is the mad scientist, and which of the two of you is the mad entrepreneur?
We are a mix of both. I'll be very honest with that. We picked up our management graduation degrees and then eventually moved on doing specific master's degrees in technology, which will drive us together to building this product. So if you look at the brainchild for the product, that is purely Nikita, because she is the one who has the nanotechnology and the materials and energy storage background. But I am more like the, you know, vehicle integration with the battery. So I am more on the periphery, while Nikita is on the core development.
Okay. So Nikita, then talk us about the core. You had the idea. The next morning, you decided to jump into it. Can you describe how the technology works?
Of course, I won't give out a lot of details because, you know, it's like the intellectual property rights and all of that has to be taken care of. But I think when we started off, we were not very clear about the kind of peptides and, you know, how does it really work in batteries and what can be done, because you don't find a lot of material around on those terms. So we actually began the journey with a lot of research work that we used to do online, and we used to use our institutional mail IDs, because of course we did not have subscriptions to all these journals and scientific papers online. So we used to log in with our institutional mail IDs and you know, grab a few of those articles on the name of the university and go through it and try and understand the different know-hows about the proteins and the biotechnology and nanotechnology. And all of these terms were alien to us in the beginning, but eventually, after doing a lot of reading, we grasped the details of these words. And then I think out of this lot of research, and then there was a lot of trial and error that we used to do. So the first thing that I think, the first time we made a cell out of proteins was when we used chickpeas and kidney beans. So the idea was bizarre to, you know, even come back at home and say that I want to glow an LED bulb with chickpeas and kidney beans, as commonly known in a Punjabi household as rajma and chole. So the first time we actually had an LED bulb glowing, it was with rajma and chole. And from that, I think at least we got convinced that proteins can actually be beneficial, because it was a very successful experiment that we did.
So tell us in layman's terms what that experiment involved.
Nothing much. It was basically mashed chickpeas and mashed kidney beans, and we actually used some soap detergent as the electrolyte, and we connected them with a few wires, and we first tried to charge it, and then we tried to connect that to the LED bulb, and just completed the circuit and the LED bulb was glowing. So that is basically roughly what we did. There is a procedure behind that entire, you know, assembling of those components. But in a nutshell, we actually placed chickpeas and rajma and dipped that into some detergent, put them around with wires, and then that's how the bulb was glowing. So that was the first thing that convinced us that if there was something written in the book, then it can genuinely be worked upon. So after that one experiment, I think we were more confident as individuals, as founders to this company. And that is when then we started researching specifically on the kind of proteins that these elements have, and the kind of peptides, and, you know, what are their different charges. And then we came down to the material that we wanted to use, and then we started actually building the 48 volt battery pack for the electric vehicle, which initially was only a 5 volt experiment, then eventually developed to being a 48 volt battery pack. And though it is still in a crude form, and we have not you know, build the entire battery management system and all of those different elements that we want to add to it. We're still in progress, but at least a 48 volt battery pack was made and it was tested in a vehicle for its mechanical strength, for its charging ability, for its ability to drive the electric vehicle, for I mean, the first thing that we wanted to test. And it was quite promising. The results were promising and we were quite successful in those experiments. And I think that is how we are still very energetic, very enthusiastic about the entire concept, because things that, of course, there are failures. There are certain things that we had to put out from the batteries that we wanted to make. But there were a lot of things that actually worked in the first go itself. And thankfully, we've been lucky that a lot of things are falling in place in the first go of their experimentation itself. So it's not a lot of disheartening situations for us. We've had our share of failures, but we've had more of success in this journey so far.
Okay, so now, in fact, you've gone to farm waste as being your feed source, so to speak, for what you're trying to do. How did you come up with that idea, and what kind of farm waste are you using?
You know, what happens is, so now we know that the raw material for us is proteins, but then the second question is, where do you procure it from? So, we can't be using the chole and rajma on a daily basis. That's like food. It's a staple food. So, during that time, during October, November 2019, a lot of smoke and those news came up from Delhi and the northern regions of India. And the main reason for that smoke and the pollution and the decrease in the air quality index was the burning of the stubble that these farmers in and around Punjab and UP and Haryana areas, they have, because they harvest the crop and the stubble that remains, they majorly burn it, and that smoke causes the pollution. So that's where we wanted to understand how we can inculcate this into the entire process. And in that understanding, we realized that these crops are all protein rich crops, so somehow they are answering our concern of where to procure the raw material from. So on an experiment basis, we just picked up a couple of stubble from the rice farmers in Odisha, neighboring Bhubaneswar, and took a trial of finding out whether the amount of protein that remains in the stubble, will that answer our query or not. And somehow the initial tests were very promising, and we could go ahead with it. So that was where the entire farm waste and the residue came into picture. And moving forward, we had to understand whether we had quantities enough in India to which would support the entire process of building the batteries. So that's where we with the insights and the research, we understood market research findings, we understood that the northern plain itself has 50 million tons of this waste per annum. And these are figures for only the northern plains, which has Delhi, Punjab, Haryana. And if you have all of India, the figure is 2-3 fold. And initially, if you look at scaling up and the initial numbers, so we hardly need about 20 million tons. Per annum, and that clearly answers our query that this material can be used and it's plentifully available to be used.
So are you agnostic to any farm waste, or does it have to be rice farms or sugarcane farms or whatever is the farm waste you are able to process?
So, though we are agnostic, but what we especially look for is a protein rich crop, so that way we get more content of protein. Otherwise, it works with, so protein is always in any form of food, protein is always present. But what helps us more is the content of protein in the entire product. So some crop which is protein rich helps us more. And presently, we are focusing on these protein rich crops.
Excellent. So where are you guys at now with your venture? You've had the idea, you've done some tests on food, then you've done tests on farm waste. It's proved to be quite beneficial. Where are we at today?
Like Nikita mentioned, so we are somewhere between our prototype and the final product. So a lot more goes into the final product than just the cells and the battery. Mm-hmm. And we are working on the battery management system and the entire hardware and software integration, which would actually help us understand the battery performance in the vehicle. So that's what we are working on.
So a lithium ion battery will have lithium, cobalt, manganese. And so that describes the chemistry of the battery. What will you be calling your battery to describe the chemistry when it's finally ready?
I think we'll call it peptide crystals, and that'll answer the chemistry.
Very nice, peptide crystals. Okay, so so many questions going through my head, but I want to take you through the dream first before we come back to the technicalities of it. Where to from here?
The journey from here, I think first we'll want to go slow. and do all our market tests and the pilot programs, like we call it, which, you know, clearly guarantees that the product is suitable for the market, and the OEMs for EVs also understand the benefits and, you know, look at the gradual switch. And then I think we'll want to eventually go commercial, create a brand in the long run, have a global presence. And so we'd want to see Nexus on a global level.
Okay.
I think I have this little small dream, because we're talking about dreams. So we began with, you know, the Forbes under 30 thing. I would like to see Nexus in the Fortune 500 in some time. So that is probably the journey that we want to have, from Forbes under 30 to Fortune 500.
You must promise us when you get to Fortune 500, you'll still make time for our podcast.
Definitely, definitely.
So are you in discussions with vehicle OEMs to see that they are open or not to try a different chemistry? Is there work that they have to do to use a peptide crystal battery rather than a lithium ion battery on their side?
So, you know, like we tested the battery that we have in a vehicle. So we tested in a two-wheeler, it's a Yobike that we tested, old version or 2012 version of Yobike that we tested our battery in. And what we realized is that we had to make this battery in according to the vehicle. So anything that the vehicle has, it should clearly fit in there and have no hassles from the vehicle manufacturer side. So the reason why I'm saying this is the vehicle manufacturer has nothing to do apart from just picking the battery and fitting it into his vehicle. That's the only job that he has to do. So he just has to switch from lithium to the peptide batteries. And besides that, you know, when we've been talking in terms of talking to these OEMs and the other EV stakeholders, so we've been keeping a little low-key, and we've been discussing with a lot of OEMs here in Odisha itself. We have a couple of two-wheeler and three-wheeler manufacturers. And given that our target market is purely two-wheeler and three-wheeler OEMs for now, so we are focusing on, you know, beginning small from the Odisha state, eventually proceeding towards the eastern region, and then having a complete all-over India impact. So in that situation, we've discussed with a couple of OEMs here who are pretty interested to try the batteries. And in fact, besides that, ever since a little bit of news has gone around and people have started getting to know about the product, we've been getting a lot of calls, and there's a lot of interest from EV manufacturers all over India who would like to try the batteries and see if they can, you know, fit into the pilot program and test and trial phase. And besides known companies, we also have a lot of these EV startups who are budding startups who probably want to start their own manufacturing or want to have their own EVs, who've been very excited to try and find out whether these batteries will fit into their space and if it can be used.
Very good clarity. So, Nishita and Nikita, I want to ask you the fundamentals then of the what did you call it? Peptide crystal battery versus the lithium ion battery. And that's, of course, the three underlying elements, which would be the cost versus lithium ion, the ability to have a supply chain that will never fail, because that's what's most important in the automotive industry. And then finally, safety. We know that the lithium ion battery is inherently unsafe because of the way the charge, discharge and energy moves through the battery or through the cell itself. It has huge issues with water, it has issues with heat, and you do not want to be anywhere close to a lithium ion battery when it decides that it wants to combust. Talk to us about the safety of your design and chemistry of the peptide crystal battery. And then after that, if you can touch on cost versus lithium ion and supply chain, please.
So I'll just briefly tell you about the safety and the cost, and the rest I'll leave on Nikita to answer. So talking on the safety, we've done our initial tests, and these batteries don't really have any heating issue, considering that it's not a metal or it's not a high reactive element. It's very subtle when it comes to the electron and energy transfer. So not that we haven't really faced any major heating issues yet, but since you have transfer of energy, the heat energy somehow during the transmission, some amount of heat has to come out. But it's not like a very major issue where we might have to, you know, stay away from the battery, or you could see blasts or something happening. So that's not the concern. So as of now, the batteries are pretty safe with the initial tests that we've done. But eventually, when we have the BMS and the other hardware PCBs included into the battery pack, I think then we'll have to do the further test to understand whether it's heating or it's pretty good for usage. And besides that, if you look at the price perspective, so these batteries are raw material as compared to lithium. It's cheaper, right? Anytime it will be cheaper because it's a waste material where we have a control over the pricing. So the global pricing for lithium-ion batteries somewhere around $150-$140 per kilowatt hour, and we are looking at targeting it somewhere around $80-$90 per kilowatt hour. So that difference, pretty much stands for an EV manufacturer also. So if this difference in our margin could be given to the customer in terms of the vehicle price, so I believe electric vehicles will eventually become a home commodity, because then the vehicle price will also come down.
Right, and talking about the how it is different from lithium-ion batteries, or you know, in comparison. So there were a couple of tests that we've done so far. And the first thing I think we tested was the charging time of these batteries. So protein have this natural tendency to, you know, they're very quick at electron transfer. So because of that property that the proteins have, these batteries actually charge 8 to 10 times faster than their lithium-ion counterparts. So that actually reduces the charging time to, you know, probably it brings it down to say about 30-35 minutes as compared to a 4-5 hours charge that a lithium-ion battery would take. On the same parameters, the range, as Nishita discussed earlier, that you know, lithium-ion batteries provide a 65 to 70 kilometers range to in a two-wheeler in India, which does not go very well with Indian households. So this battery that we have in a protein crystal composition, that also gives a better range because it's again a property, a natural property in proteins, that they tend to be very sticky, which does not allow very quick moving or detaching of electrons. So the charge remains for longer, which makes a longer range also possible. So in terms of numbers, if you can have say 65 to 70 odd kilometers because of a lithium-ion battery, the peptide crystal batteries can give you over 100 kilometers range any day in a two-wheeler vehicle. And apart from that, I think the best part is that it is completely biodegradable. It is made out of natural material. So that's no comparison at all, I would say. Lithium is hazardous. We all know that. And proteins, on the matter of fact, are biological molecules. And that is why they are completely eco-friendly and biodegradable. Which, you know, more than that, something that we really like personally is that they are completely indigenously made batteries. They are made in India, they are made by Indians, and it is made for the globe. So this is something that I think, more than being a price factor or differentiator or better over the lithium-ion batteries, we should be proud of using these batteries. There has to be a pride factor that is attached to these batteries, because it is indigenously developed. It is an innovation in technology that has come out from the Indian land. And I think that at least the Indian people should be very proud of.
Do you have a golden hour, so to speak? You know, when, for example, when you cut sugarcane, you've got 12 hours to get the sugarcane to the sugar factory. Is there something like that in farm waste coming to you? Or so does that mean that the sweet spot for you is 300-400 kilometers from a factory? And so can you have one or two big factories in India and you can take farm waste from anywhere, no matter if it arrives 30 days later to your factory?
Well, I think we do not have a specific lead time for the product or the entire channel, because the entire raw material that is collected goes through a process of vigorous filtration and isolation and maybe soaking and all of that. So it doesn't really matter much with even if there are certain amount of damages on the way, then doesn't really matter much when it comes down to what we are actually using into the battery. So there is no kind of a specific golden hour or a sweet spot that, you know, you have to have your factories close by to the farmlands, or it has to reach you within, say, two or three hours of being chopped off. It's okay if it takes, as long as the supply is regular and we have a certain amount of material every day, it's okay if the lead time is a little longer than expected as well, because that doesn't really hamper the entire process or doesn't bother the entire process much. It's fine.
But to be more specific, Nikita, sorry, just on that subject, Nikita, what I'm trying to get at is, does your plan involve two or three big gigafactories for India or 20 smaller factories and farm locations, and therefore the complexities of logistics?
I think we haven't thought of that probably yet with regard to whether we want two or three gigafactories or we want to go ahead with small factories. But on a personal note, if I have to decide, then I would probably look at smaller factories in different locations as compared to two or three big factories in the whole of the country, because that we'll be able to procure a lot of raw material from different parts of the country and reduce transportation costs in smaller factories. And more than that, I think the locals will benefit a lot with this, because a lot of people get jobs, and it'll just increase livelihood, and lifestyle of people will change. I would be more in favor of changing lifestyles of people than earning too many profits with bigger factories, personally.
Very good.
Having said that, it's always like a dream for every producer to someday maybe have gigafactories, or maybe work at that scale. But having said that, like Nikita clearly mentioned, it's for us, it's clearly important that sustainability also takes one of the core seats. So maybe considering all of that, again, too early to think, but maybe we might look at a combination of both, maybe smaller factories and one gigafactory. So you never know what happens in the future.
I want to change gears then. You are the future of India, and it's really energizing, inspiring to talk to you. You are under 25, and you're two women. And, the secret source of India, the magic of India, is it's Nari Shakti, it's women power. How has the journey been to be two women entrepreneurs? You obviously come from families that are incredibly supportive. That can't be said for a lot of other women in India, but how has that journey been for you to be two women entrepreneurs in India? What are the roadblocks you faced? What are the wins that you've had that you want to celebrate?
I think Nikita goes first.
The journey for me has been exciting, I wouldn't lie. Because as you mentioned, we do come from families who are very supportive in terms of what we want to do. But even then, they are obviously very concerned with having a stable lifestyle and having an income in hand, because when there is a comparison between your classmates and your friends, and they have proper jobs and pretty good packages, and at the same time you're struggling with this entire startup and you're running behind the government for grants and you're looking for funding and all, so it does definitely get them concerned with regard to financial stability. But they've been supportive in terms of what we wanted to do and the ideas that we've had. Having said that, there have been a certain roadblocks as well, and probably roadblocks have been more in terms of when we've had investor interactions, when we've pitched to different people with regard to the product. So a major roadblock for us would probably be we are not from a very technical or very engineering based background in terms of our education. So to understand these terms, to get to know about nanotechnology and bio-nanotechnology and these peptides in all of these scientific terms, that was the first roadblock that we faced. And to overcome that, we had to actually do a lot of reading. We had to undergo a lot of courses and understand this entire segment of technology, because we were into the management background always, and that is what fascinated us. So jumping into a science field was tough, and one of the biggest roadblocks that we faced so far. Apart from that, I think it was just a little bit of a, as Nishita mentioned earlier, that when you have a woman in technology, it automatically raises a little bit of an eyebrows from people. And in that space, I'm sure it gets difficult to convince them, because a lot of people don't listen to you with open minds. They have a prejudice in their mind that it is a woman and they're very young and they're into technology, so they do not foresee a future. That becomes a problem.
It's been a good roller coaster ride, I'll tell you honestly. When you start off and you think of a product, when you started off with the concept of making a battery, I didn't know we'll come even this far. And at that time we were just considering, try karke dekhte hain, let's see if it'll go far, it'll not go far, how it's gonna work. And eventually, we've just taken things as they came to us. So honestly, I have really gone with the flow. And again, coming into in India, starting off with a company and you call it a startup, it's very fascinating. But to understand the depth of that well, which we call a startup, that really takes effort and time and a lot of resources to understand, whether it is safe enough to jump into that well, or you should just simply keep away from the well and look at a very prospering job career, or maybe even do something simpler than what we plan to do. So if you look at the entire startup ecosystem, it's more about bigger valuations, a lot of funding, customer reaching products, And that's where the entire startup concept comes. But besides that, there's always a hidden element, which is called business. And the business, in terms of not being a startup and a simple business, also yields you money. So the entire confusion between whether you should just stick to a normal conventional business or enter into the startup route and, you know, dive into that well, really needs time and effort. So that's what we've taken time to understand, see the ecosystem, look at the ecosystem from both sides, from the startup side, from the investor side, from the, you know, evangelist side, where you have Startup Odisha policies, Startup India policies. And then considering all of that, when you jump into that space, you're technically going with the flow. So we've, both of us, it's been a roller coaster ride, and we've just gone with the flow. And this is where the flow has taken us.
So do you have a message to women entrepreneurs in India, such as yourself?
You know, I always say to my friends, my colleagues, to every person I come across, it's gender neutral, that, you know, you enjoy what you do, and you break your roadblock for the first time when you head out of your comfort zone to do something that is maybe different than what somebody else is doing. And that will be my first message to people, for women specifically, that, you know, if there's something that fascinates you and there's a passion that's driving you, please head out of your comfort zone and dive into that space to take it forward. I mean, there's nothing better than doing something that you're very passionate about and that's literally driving you towards doing something different. So if there's anything that really drives you and, you know, if you think you can create a difference, I think you should really break your chains and just simply go ahead. I mean, it's all about celebrating this spirit of entrepreneurship and celebrating the spirit of being a human and being, you know, being capable of making that change.
I'd just like to add on to that personally. So there was something that I learned with this little journey that we have had so far with regard to entrepreneurship. And this message is basically not just for women. It's for everybody who wishes to be an entrepreneur or wants to get into this ecosystem. Is that, you know, from the outside of it, entrepreneurship, it sounds very huge. And it seems so much more materialistic than what it actually is. And entrepreneurship is not just about, you know, putting in your money and having a good team and just making a product and selling it to the market. For me personally, entrepreneurship is a lot more about the emotional strength that the founders possess in them. So if you are emotionally stable enough to, you know, deal with the highs and lows and to understand that things are not going to work overnight and you have to be patient, there has to be a lot of perseverance till you reach your goal. I think that is going to be one of the major things that is going to make a company or a startup work. And that I think everybody should focus on. So if any day there are people who want to get into this field or who wish to be entrepreneurs, I think the first thing that you should believe you have is the strength to deal with the highs and lows and to be emotionally capable in everything that comes to you.
Nishita and Nikita, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on this program with us today. We've learned a lot and we can't wait for you to come to Pune when you're able to do so after the corona drama is behind all of us. Thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us. It was a real pleasure discussing with you. And I look forward to visiting Pune and exploring the city as well as Adore as a company. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having both of us.
Excellent. Thanks so much, guys. I'm your host for this episode, Ravin Mirchandani. But I would not be here without the amazing Energizing India podcast team. Onkar, our podcast director and the man who makes it all happen in the end, much like a big fat grand Indian wedding, bringing together the research, data and attention to details, all in the timelines to get the next episode out on time. Trivikram, our podcast co-host and head of research, and Sunil, who along with me is executive producer of our program. The Energizing India podcast is an Adore Digitron production, giving a voice to the EV industry in India. If you enjoyed listening to us today, make sure to follow us on whatever platform you are listening on, whether it's Spotify, Apple iTunes, or our own portal, energizingindia.tv. Thank you very much, and see you on the next episode.